Triple M Rocks Saturday Arvo Footy. Triple M Rocks the Footy. For Harvey Norman Home Appliances.
Triple M Footy. Get your boots
out! And welcome back to the third hour of Sunday Triple M NRL right across the Triple M network. About to kick off at ANZ Stadium, Rabbitohs Dragons. Gordy Tallis, Paul Kent, Ryan Girdler is the fresh man. We'll get to him very shortly. Now, let me just be clear here on this Cameron Smith charge, Paul Kent. You've got the info in there in front of you, mate?
Yes, like even an average reporter would do, Maroon.
Well, I'm not even an average
reporter. No, clearly. Clearly. No, he's been charged with dangerous contact, grade two. That's the significant part, grade two.
Right.
So it's 200 points, which means it's 2 weeks on the sideline. If he takes the early plea, it gets reduced to 150 points, which gives him 1 week on the sideline and 50 carryover. So that's significant because it was an ugly-looking tackle. Kevin Proctor yelled out in pain. I didn't think Cameron was actually intentionally trying to do anything nasty towards him, but the judiciary or the panel, match review panel, has seen that differently. I will say there's been a few other charges overnight as well. Bundy Afoa has been charged with dangerous contact. Jazz Tavaga's been charged with dangerous contact. Dylan Napa's been charged with careless high tackle and also dangerous contact. So two charges for Dylan Napa. Cameron Munster, dangerous contact. Josh Adokar, dangerous contact. And then Sam Cassiano, dangerous contact. So out of that game last night between Melbourne and the Titans, there was four charges against the Melbourne Storm, which is... it's pretty steep. So no doubt they'll all be taking the early charge. The only bloke who will also be looking for time on the sideline is Sam Cassiano because he's got carryover and he's got priors. So
you think Camel will take the early charge?
Well,
you don't think he'll fight that? I think it's a ridiculous charge. I mean, you see that 10 times every game. I think the fact of the matter is there was another guy involved in the tackle that was there earlier than Cam. Obviously, he was the last man in and he tried to get the guy on the ground, but Proctor's body was just put in an awkward position. But, gee, I don't think that's anywhere near as bad as some of those third man in guys that come in and just attack the knees. I don't think there's a lot in it.
I agree with you, Gertz. I said earlier in the show that I didn't think there was a lot in it. I'm surprised by the grade two. What I will say is that generally when charge sheets come out, and we always have weeks where we get confused about the charge and why has he been charged or why has it been so severe, or conversely, why hasn't someone been charged? You bring up Michael Buettner, who runs it, and he generally has a pretty sound reason as to why they've come up with it, what they saw in it. Sometimes they look at things differently than what we do from just a footy fan point of view.
Yeah.
But I will say, generally when they charge somebody, they're pretty confident that they'll get a conviction out of it. So we'll wait and see. We'll have a talk to them later and see what they come up with.
Okay, good on you, Paul. Gordy Tallis, Ryan Girdler, we didn't get to welcome you in, mate. Happy Mother's Day. Everything good? Did the right thing this morning?
I did. I went to Wollongong last night and spent this morning with my mother and the family down there, and she still continues to ask me to tell you to stop calling, if you could. But no,
I'm
it was
just
really
checking
good
on the welfare
went
of you, mate.
This morning. No, I'm really good. Mm. Yeah, all good.
Yeah.
And obviously looked after my wife as well, who's a mother and did the right thing this morning. Yeah. So I'm good to go.
Okay, well, we've got plenty to get through here today. We're going to talk more about Indigenous rounds, some of the things that happened over round 10, which we haven't got to yet. We'll take a song, come back with more, and we'll talk to Gordy Tallis about a brand new thing called Out for Blood, which is coming up on Sunday Triple M NRL. Sunday Triple M NRL, Gordy Tallis, Paul Kent, Ryan Girdler, Anthony Maroon, 1 minute gone, Rabbitohs and Dragons nil all. No, nothing's happened there as yet. Just looking at the Indigenous round jumpers, South Sydney are in an all-black jumper today.
Except for the green and the red bits.
But it's predominantly black, would you say 85%, Paul?
There's a difference.
I'd say 95.
There's a difference between predominantly and all.
But if I said what team is there in all black, what would you say?
The All Blacks.
The All Blacks.
Looks black from a distance, Maroon, I'll give you that.
Yeah, well, I think anyway, I don't like the idea of teams changing jumpers every week.
Why is that?
Because I just don't like it. We've got Anzac Day jumper. We've got Indigenous jumper. They're all wonderful, wonderful, wonderful causes. Please, don't get me wrong.
Come on.
But every week we need a different jumper? Seriously?
Yeah, you need to be a Rockefeller to buy the jersey for the year.
You don't have to buy them all, though.
Oh, yeah, but
you
if
don't
you're
have to get them all.
You don't have to buy them. You can't afford to buy them all. So
the other thing—that's
a good one. That's a good looking jersey.
The other two thing too is, fellas, like, I mean, I've that Canterbury Parramatta game. I didn't know which team was which. Anyway,
I thought the Cowboys and the Tigers was a little bit hard as well.
I agree, Ryan.
A little bit difficult.
So it looks like the Rabbitohs have scored.
There are problems with, because jumpers are now screen printed, there's a real issue where too many jumpers look similar and they look just a mess from a distance. Up close, they look spectacular, but we watch footy from a distance.
Yeah.
I like watching the English Premier League where one team plays in blue and the other team plays in red.
Okay, Hymel Hunt has just scored for Souths after only 2 minutes. The Rabbitohs lead the Dragons 4-0. That thanks to Tyre Power. Boys, out for blood. In the lead-up to this year's Origin Series, the NRL, in partnership with the Australian Red Cross, have launched the Out for Blood campaign. The idea behind it is to encourage people to donate blood and bleed for their state, like many players have done while playing State of Origin. Every Sunday in May, we'll look back at a moment where a player has literally bled or produced a heroic performance for their state. Gordy, what about an Origin moment from you where a teammate has just literally put it all on the line and just bled for their state?
The one that comes directly to mind would have been Michael Devia, and he wasn't a teammate of mine. Well, he was at club games, but he wasn't that night. And Michael Devia, that time when he was playing Origin, I think at Lang Park, and he got split open. And they come out and they run out, and he was such a tough guy. They just stapled
John Orchard. They stapled him.
Yeah.
Stapled him there and then. And I happened to be one of the groomsmen at his wedding, and I actually slipped up and got him high and actually split him and knocked him out too.
Accidentally.
Yeah, that game. Well, it does happen in Origin, and I stood over there. So I felt really bad. His wife still doesn't talk to me to this day, basically, because of the staples. But Michael Devia, this is a guy that I remember not only that got stapled, he played one game for the Broncos and he broke his jaw and cheekbone in either half. So he broke his cheekbone in the first half, the jaw in the second, finished it, then broke his cheekbone again in a City Country game and rocked up with his boots 2 days later to come and play for the Broncos. And he convinced the doctor that he was right to play, and Wayne just refused to put him on. But that's the type of guy. He just felt guilty if he didn't go out there and play and just fill his spot within, or play his role within the team.
Gary, good fella too, Michael Devia.
Champion. Yeah. Absolute champion.
And just to get in the spirit of this segment, Gordy's bleeding at the moment.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? You know. Cut himself shaving.
I got to stop thinking I'm Crocodile Dundee with the big knife.
Goods, we're going to get a story from you next week, so have a think about that through the week. Remember, State of Origin is coming up at the MCG June 6th. Make sure you donate blood at your local Red Cross to show you bleed for your state and get your Blues or Maroons a win before the series starts. To find out more or book your appointment, you want to book an appointment, it's easy enough to do. NRL.com/donateblood or donateblood.com.au/NRL, and you can really help out. So Adam Reynolds has missed the gold. Rabbitohs lead the Dragons 4-0, 4 minutes gone at ANZ Stadium. Boys, a couple of the issues that we didn't get to today. Let's have a quick talk about some of these. The latest on the Bulldogs salary cap pressure. PK, now we're hearing that perhaps David Clemmer and Mbai might get shopped around.
Well, not that they'll get shopped. Well, Mbai's being quietly shopped around. The Dogs are inquiring or taking calls to see if anyone's interested in him. And Parramatta have expressed an interest in Clemmer. They're obviously in the market for a front rower. They're heavily towards signing Junior Paulo for next year, but they still want to have a look at Clemmer. So the understanding from Adrian Prezenko in the Sun Herald today is that they've made a couple of subtle inquiries to the Bulldogs, the Eels, and asked if Clemmer would be available, whether Bulldogs would discuss releasing him. Unfortunately for Bulldogs fans, it has got to the stage where someone from one of the more beloved players at the club is more than likely going to have to leave, because the club needs to get down below the salary cap. They need to offload players who are of value, and obviously that's the players who are
in form,
going well.
Who makes those calls, PK? I mean, Dean Pay, I mean, he's the guy that's obviously got to have some control over the roster.
He doesn't have final control, though, and this is probably prudent, because allowing the coach to have final say is what got them into this problem.
Yeah, but in who goes?
Well, I dare say the way Canterbury are approaching this, it will be some sort of combined decision. So the board, the new CEO, Andrew Hill, and Dean Pay will all sort of discuss it together, and at some point, some common ground, because as you know, when deals come to you, they're very, very rarely apples for apples. A guy will come and they'll say, look, we'll take Clemmer off you, and we'll take 60% of his salary. Another club might say, look, we'll take Mbai and we'll take only 40% of his salary. Mm. Another club will say, well, we'll, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You've got to start measuring up. You've got to sit down. And you've got to, at the end of the day, what will drive the Bulldogs is how much actual salary cap money it frees up.
Is because, that it?
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Yeah. Well, that's the
even
whole
even if he's their
reason.
Best attacking player.
Even
it's
if it is, because...
regardless.
Well, that's where Dean Pale come into it and say, well, okay, if I know...
How am I
going to
win for the
losing,
next 3 years?
Yeah. Losing Mbai will is probably the best thing from a pure salary cap point of view, because it's one player where you dare say another club will take will be happy to take a large percentage of his contract. But then Pay says, well, gee, I'm actually letting go a hell of a footballer, and this guy is really starting to grow into a quality fullback.
Clubman.
And he's a great clubman. He's been there for quite some time now. I think he started there in was it 2012? It was his first year there. So he's been around for some time. But it will be a decision where they all have to sit down and reach agreement. At the end of the day, it will be the board there that make the ultimate decision, because the one certainty they all have is they have to be under the salary cap next year, and at the moment they are a long way away from it.
What would make sense with me would be either Woods or Foran.
Well, is Foran their form's not there?
Hey,
their form's not there. So, like PK was saying, someone might come and pay 30 or 40% of their contract, but then you still got to come up with the other half, and then you got to get someone in for that money that's going to do a similar job. I mean,
you think Brisbane with their playmaking role, you think that there'd be a four in there, and there'd be some clubs that would look at Woods, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Gordon, that all comes down to clubs' needs and wants.
Yeah.
You've just got to sit down, and that's why I tend to like the fact that we don't have trade periods and all that in the NRL, and the fact that it goes on all year, because it allows teams, when they've got themselves in trouble or they suddenly realise that there's a position or a role vacant within their roster, they can just go into the market straight away and find a fix for it.
Yep.
Whereas if you had to wait for, say, a trade period until June, you might have to give away 4 or 5 games before you can go and fix your halfback problem or fix your fullback problem or whatever. As far as the Bulldogs go, that they have got a lot of thinking to do, and they're going to have to sit down. And at some point, they're just going to have to say, there's a fan forum next week, Anthony, and what they'll do there is a board who promised last year or earlier this year before the elections that they would not pay or subsidise any player's contract at another club, which is in reference to James Graham now playing for St George Illawarra, where Canterbury is still paying a large part of his contract. They looks like they're going to have to do a little bit of a backflip on that.
All right, Rabbitohs 10, Dragons 0.
Who scored that second try?
That was Angus Crichton, I think it was. Good.
It was a great line, yeah.
So Rabbitohs 10, Dragons 0, that score thanks to Tyre Power. Let's talk a little bit of Origin here, boys. We haven't had an opportunity today. And this one probably... you're probably the expert here, Ryan, to kick this off. Blues, new look Blues centres. What would you do here in relation to New South Wales Origin centres, Ryan Girdler?
Well, I picked my side yesterday, Maroon. I think Latrell Mitchell will be on the left side, and I think Ewan Aitken will be on the right side, to be honest. James Roberts, we saw him switch over to the left yesterday. And, look, I think he was probably... I don't think he's been consistent enough this year, given the Broncos haven't been in great form as well. And I think the fact that, you know, Ewan Aitken's form's been, you know, consistent, and the Dragons have been in such good touch, and he'll take a lot of confidence into the game. I think, you know, it just feels like it's his time at the moment to give it a shot. And he's a quality player. I think there's defensively, he's really strong. He's tough. He's rugged. And there'll be a few Dragons players in there, so I think he'll kind of feel comfortable. But it's a big ask. He's a young guy coming into what potentially will be a young back line with someone probably inexperienced on his outside as well, because I think that they'll go with a couple of young wingers. So,
Who do you think
he's ready
wingers
for the job.
Be?
I think Addo Carr and Kotrick will be on the wings. Ferguson was outstanding yesterday, but I think they might go.
But
with
I think they might push
different.
James Roberts on a wing just simply because of his speed when he comes and he runs across field and straightens.
Absolutely not.
A towering forward pack.
No. I don't
you got to be a specialist, I think. At that level, Gordy, and there's so much more to a role of a winger than, you know, those runs. It's, you know, high ball positioning. There's so many different things. And there's some really good, you know, wingers for New South Wales floating around at the moment that are in form. So you go with them.
Boys, what about PK? We got a small window there to speak to Mal Meninga about this interchange cut down and when we might get it. And did he suggest that it might be 1 or 2 years ago?
Yeah, I wasn't really heartened by that at all, hearing Mal say that. I was quite disappointed that they've taken the view that before they look at reducing the interchange, they'll look at other things like cutting down the time in wasted it within a game. Yeah, you can roll a smoke now when they're trying to decide what they do after a penalty.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they have a committee meeting every time there's a scrum.
Mm.
Look, I think we just need to bite the bullet and start getting tough as a game and say, you know what, guys? You guys are just having a laugh here.
Yeah.
Get to the scrum, pack your scrum. Mm. If you don't pack it now, I'm going to penalise the last side in.
Shot clocks were the worst thing ever invented.
No.
Shot clocks aren't, they're not stringent
the
enough.
The dropouts as well.
No, like, well, they wait.
No, because.
Exactly.
They wait. They need to lop straight away 10 seconds off the shot clock.
Yeah, that's right, because the shot clock has made it quicker than what it used to be. Because remember, they used to waste more time, but now...
Now they wait for the kick, Gordon.
Yeah, I know, but it's still quicker than the old time.
They get into position now quicker, earlier, but then they wait.
But then they wait, which is...
Where
which
they
is
used
the
to dawdle
so,
to position.
Yeah, so then what'll happen is, you know, they used to just wait and take their time, walk slowly. So now they're in position and they wait for the shot clock. Mm. If they're there and they don't put the ball straight in, they just got to start penalising. Or, as you said... Cut the shot clock in half.
Yeah.
And I think the referees, and I saw it probably about half a dozen times already over this weekend, and I've been having a look at it, and some of the referees, the positions they're in to make decisions for tries. Last night there was a couple of times when he was like front and centre, right in front of it, and he sent it upstairs. And the other one, and I want to say, and I think they get hung out to dry a little bit, our referees, because of their linesmen. And I saw it last night in the Manu try. You know, it was a great try for the Roosters. He was about, I reckon... half a metre inside, never looked like going out. The linesman was there. He's only got one job to do on that play. Mm. And Chechen was happy to award the try, went over and said everything good. He saw it. He knew it was good. But the linesman then was going, no, mate, check it, check it, check it. Now, it all goes back on Chechen because he's the referee and everyone's saying, oh, here he goes, he sends it up again. But we need to get some confidence in these linesmen to make a decision to help these referees out to keep the ball in play and help us as well, because it's happening on so many different levels.
I agree with you, Gertz. They need to get – there's a whole issue there with the linesmen not supporting the referees. They're the ones that don't have confidence in themselves.
That's right.
And it reflects on the referee. We all sit there and we get cranky with the referee and say, oh, God, just make a decision. The linesmen need to start showing a bit of confidence and a little bit of courage to actually say to the guy, yeah, well, I'm going to back my judgment here. And more than nine times out of ten, they're right.
Yeah.
Okay. I totally agree. And as far as the time wasting goes, they're spot on. We need to go a complete overhaul and start fixing that now.
Yep. Can I – look, just to stick up for them, it'd be hard when you're just looking and you're watching the line and a boot goes across the line and to know at that time in that split second to know whose boot it is.
But your eye is a better camera than the TV camera beside the field.
There's going to be ones that they need to go to, but there's some that are so obvious, that they just need to have the courage. And
the ones they should be going to, Gertz, are the ones where they become unsighted. If you're sighted, just back your judgment.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But they don't back their judgment now. Mm. Oh, he might have stepped out. Yeah. I'm not sure. Just check it, will you? Just check it.
The linesman need to think that there's no video referee and they need to think that they need to make the call. And then if they absolutely can't make the call, then they send it up. Otherwise, just get the job done. Let us get on with it.
Rabbitohs 10, Dragons 0. 14 gone in that game at ANZ Stadium. That's
you haven't taken your eyes off that screen, have you?
Well,
look at you.
See, it's my job, Gordon, to know what the score is. So that's why I'm looking at that.
If Newcastle were playing Manly, you wouldn't be watching.
It would be the same if Wentworthville were playing
what
Western
Suburbs. What were we just talking about,
Murray? You were just talking about... hang on a second. I do have a bad short-term memory. Now, you're talking about, I'm genuine. You're talking about some of the great players of the 70s, and I had a few I was going to add. Now, boys, the next thing on the list, now, you're talking about referees and linesmen and your eye being the real McCoy. Back page of the Sun Herald. Danny Widler writes a great article today. It says, Todd Carney passed up the opportunity of a deal with the Cowboys to support his mum through breast cancer treatment. Now his mum says he deserves another chance in the NRL. So now I wonder where we are. Does anyone know any further on the situation with Todd Carney, given that there's probably still one or two NRL clubs that could do with a Todd Carney?
Absolutely. I think Manly, the way they're playing with the game, I think Manly with a 5-8 role, there's one club. Would the Raiders take him back, Paul?
No.
There's no club gone.
What was his form like? I mean, he played a few games up there for the Pride. I mean, did anyone get any feedback? Was he?
A couple of games I watched, they got beaten.
Yeah, I saw
was
a game.
Was he going okay?
No, he wasn't going great, but he wasn't going...
Not at that level. To Todd's ability, no, he wasn't playing, you know, and, you know, shooting out the lights.
So do you guys think his career's over, Paul?
Look, it's going to be a struggle. He still hasn't been cleared by the NRL, and that's the issue. The Cowboys had to go and start jumping through all the hoops to try and get him cleared by the NRL. No, but they thought they were on the verge of actually doing that. Now, part of getting him cleared was the NRL said to the Cowboys, which were going to be his club at the time, what are you doing to help support him? So once he goes and finds another club, you've got to go through the whole process again. And they will be saying to the club, what are you doing to support him? What measures you got around him and things like that. So, look, we all...
It's a big investment, not just financially, but in
it is. Well, look,
welfare. And
part of the... Look, the NRL is terrified, and I believe, that he will embarrass the game again. So you've this guy who left the game to the point, and it's important to remember, he was never actually banned from the NRL. It's just that no other club wanted to take the risk and sign him. That's why he had to go and play in England. That's why he was over there.
I didn't know that. I thought there was a ban on him
playing. No, never was banned, Anthony. And that's part of the misunderstanding around him. People think, oh, how long's he been banned from the game? It's just that he got to the point where clubs thought, let's remember, he had three clubs, the same pattern at all three clubs. He put them on the back page, then he put them on the front page.
Yeah.
So clubs were like, we don't want to take the risk. Finally, the Cowboys this year, they were the first club to actually go to the NRL and say, we would like to register him. And the NRL say, okay, let's begin the process. Now he needs to go, when he goes and finds his next club, he needs to sit there and they need to say, okay, we will now go to the NRL, and the NRL will say, yeah, you need to do this, that, or whatever. What are you doing to help him? And they'll go through the process. Now, purely from a punishment point of view, he's more than served his time, given what we've shown we're prepared to accept.
Yes.
Okay. Mm. But it has to go through that process, because it would be embarrassing for the game to say, yep, Todd, come back, and then 6 weeks into it, he's at a nightclub and he's had three schooners too many, and we're in trouble again. Mm-hmm.
Okay, still Rabbitohs 10-0 there, 17 gone. Now, the other thing in the telly today, Michael Carayannis writes a great story about Josh Mansour, seven-hour surgery to rebuild that left side of his face. But there's been a lot of talk, too, about where Josh Mansour might play his rugby league beyond this year. And a couple of clubs are chasing his services, Ryan, as you would well imagine they would be.
Well, he's a great clubman and a great player, but the Panthers, I mean, they're a developing club, aren't they? They're a club that likes to bring people through their junior systems, and when you operate a club like that, at some point, these junior guys, they all generally need to get pay increases, and I think there'll be a few of them, especially on the back of their form this season, that are in the next couple of years going to be looking to be on more money. And Josh has obviously been there for a while, and some of the wingers demand a fair bit of money these days. I think a winger like Josh is probably asking, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 a year.
Well, he's an Australian representative, and he has the added value of he plays like a back rower.
Yeah.
He makes great meters.
And that's what you want out of your wingers. That's the good wingers these days are guys who on kick returns, if they don't actually return the ball off the kick, then they're taken and hit up one or two, actually can punch a hole in the defense and get the momentum for that set. You talk to the people who know the game, and they talk about how the game is decided by the momentum throughout the sets. And if you can get off to a good first or second tackle and get the momentum for the rest of the set, you're basically on your way for.
But
for
wingers aren't far.
From a winger, though, like, I mean, how important is that side? But yeah, with young guys coming through the system, and they've got a guy like Crichton at the moment doing a pretty good job.
Well,
from
it's about priority skirts. It's about
is this, he a guy that you pay $500,000 to, Josh Mansour?
Well, Penrith have clearly taken the view that, well, it depends what you got coming after him. If you've got him for $500,000 and you've got a kid coming who's probably 20% less in talent and ability at this stage of his career, but he's on
half the price,
50% less contract. Yeah. Mm. You do your math and you say, you know what, for dollar for dollar, we get more value out of this guy. And you say to Josh Mansour, which is what Penrith has done, go off with our best wishes and make your money.
Boys, we'll take a break. We'll come back and talk more about this, what's going on this afternoon. More about we'll get the Raging Bull on, and we'll talk about the Raiders Sharks, which is going to be a big game, which we have on the Triple M network at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Raiders Sharks live from GIO Stadium. Gordy Tallis, Paul Kent, Ryan Girdler, Anthony Maroon. Rabbitohs 10, Dragons 0 as Triple M rocks the footy. Welcome back to Sunday Triple M NRL right across the Triple M network. Your game at 4 o'clock this afternoon is the Sharks and the Raiders in Canberra. Dan Ganane will lead the call team. Ryan Girdler, it's just you and So I think Gordy's heading home. So you're down Gordy Tallis today, Ryan. Can you and Dan handle it?
Oh, we'll
is
handle
Billy
it.
Harrigan here? Or
oh, just... I think Bill's going to come in later, right. Yeah. Okay. So that'll be a good afternoon. It's going to be a good game. I'm looking forward to getting into that one.
Beautiful thing is you'll be able to get a few. You'll be able to finish your sentences, though, if Gordy's not there. Oh, sorry, Gordy. I was only kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm here, actually. I'm going on the Matty John show tonight.
Yeah. How is Matty listening to us from the man shed?
Yeah, Matty. Matty listens in a fair bit and texts.
Because I noticed that Matty did mention to you that you really give me a hard time, and today at 11:19 it got to a physical threat where you threatened to punch my something lights out.
Well, I'm not going to punch your teeth because I lock my knuckles.
But, you know, you go on Matty's show and you go on, when you're with Vonnie, you know, you just like you've got stars in your eyes.
So much talent.
It's just, but it's just
so much talent.
You're probably right, but it's just respect, isn't it? Just respect.
Oh, mate, it's absolutely, mate, you know, like when you work with talented people like that, like especially Vonnie and Matty, and then I turn up here on Sunday.
But if it's all about respect.
Suddenly back to C grade.
Yeah, but if it's all about self-respect.
It's just, you know, it's just giving back, you know, just trying to, you know, just giving back to the game type of thing Sunday with you.
Oh, there's no going back to that, is there?
Oh, it's going
to
be good for your CV though, Maroon.
Yeah, absolutely. Rabbitohs 10, Dragons 0, 15 till half time. It's time for this. So this is where we let the raging bull, Gordon Tallis, out of the bullpen, off the chain, out into the paddock, and he can just go for his absolute life. What is on your mind, raging bull? Get it off your chest here, right here and now. Whatever you want to do, what is the topic today on the raging bull?
Well, I'm skating on thin ice today.
Right.
Because I'm going against Big Mal Meninga
and
the rules committee that I don't know how many years ago now, maybe 3-4 years ago, we changed the interchange.
Yeah.
And we... I think as a collective group thought that, well, it's going to go from 8 or 10 to 8 and 8 to 6 and keep on going until we got back to that magic number of 4 or 6. And now they say that they had a meeting and nothing will be done for 2 years. I thought that meeting would have been done 2 years ago because it's been in place. We've watched the players' weights go up. When I played, Spud Carroll was the biggest guy on the field. I don't think he was over 120. Lazo wouldn't have been over 115. We're getting guys running around, nearly tipping the scales at 130 kilos. That ain't fair on our little halves. There's not enough guys out there with fatigue, the way the coaches are slowing down the game, that they're slowing down the game. The shot clock has quickened up the dropouts, but then players waiting there. They've quickened up the players getting the scrums, but then there's still a lot of standing around. So the coaches are going to keep on getting time out of the game. We need to keep on bringing – we got to stay ahead of them and keep on bringing fatigue in for the little guys. So I would be changing the rules. And we don't need to wait. They can adapt. We saw right at the beginning of the year when the referees started blowing penalties how quick the game adapted, and we're seeing a better product out there on weekends now, and it's more open and the playmakers are starting to get back into it, that we can change the rules on the run.
And you've only got to look at Sam Cassiano over the summer and the job Craig Bellamy did to him. He was regarded as the big man in the game.
Yeah.
And in one summer, Craig Bellamy stripped all that fat off, got him nice and lean and hard, and got him able to play more minutes. It's a myth that it takes 1 or 2 years to get players down fit enough to play an extra 6 minutes in a game of football.
Absolutely.
And this part of it, Gordon, and I know I'm jumping on your bandwagon.
Love
here,
it.
But part of the problem here is we get conned by the coaches who come up with all these little doomsayers ideas about why we can't do this when the game's crying out for it, the fans are crying out for it, people want to see it, but we get told all these myths about, oh, well, it's going to lead to more injuries. Well, that's not right. It's going to lead to the game getting more wrestle. That's not right. We thought that was what the coaches all said when it went from 10 to 8, that there'll be more wrestle because they'll slow the game down with the wrestle to try and make it so they get more rest. That didn't happen because players were unable to do it. And we need to start getting out of the coaches and stop listening to what the coaches are saying, who are terrified of having tired players on the field. The one thing coaches don't want is tired players because it's the one thing they can't coach.
To my point, the Dogs had 100% ball control, right? That's a perfect side. There was no fatigue. There was interchange. That wasn't great footy to watch.
Mm.
That's just those guys getting through their set, getting through exactly what they did. And, you know, kudos to Dean Payne and the guys because they have been losing and they just had to get a W. But that's not what we want to see. Around 80% when they're throwing the ball around, when fatigue comes in, I like fatigued in the game. I like
even
going and pushing.
Won't they just find other ways, the coaches, like with the HIA?
They will. That's the danger.
But
see, well, see, part of the...
They're cracking down on that now, aren't they, Paul?
Well, look, there is always concern now, and the NRL's gone quiet on actually outing clubs for flouting the HIA rules because there's been a couple of doctors apparently have got upset and quit because they didn't like the criticism. Well, you know what? Tough luck. Get out of the game if that's the case.
Quack, quack.
The fact is, look, some teams already exploit the HIA, right?
Yep.
And you see a player goes in, he gets a stinger in his shoulder, he gets up, he's holding his shoulder, but because it's 22 minutes into the game, it's time for him, he's a middle forward, it's time for him to come off. So they go on, they tap him on the head, he goes off for an HIA, they get a free interchange. Some teams, and I've looked at the stats, some teams every week, even though there's eight interchanges, are having up 14, sometimes 15 replacement players because they're sending six and seven off in the HIA. They have their 10-minute rest while they get assessed, and then they come back on as a free, and they get the free interchange value. So that's in the game. We know that. That's why the game has got to be proactive and say, you know what, you guys are doing this anyway, and we're gonna get ahead of you guys. Todd Greenberg needs to drive this rules committee, and instead of leaving it up to them, he needs to be the dissenting voice in the room who challenges their thinking. They're all thinking the same way. They're all saying this is what, and they're trying to do the right thing, but they're in a captive room where they're all sitting there and they all think alike. Get out and talk to the people. And ask them what they want to see in their game. There's nobody in out among the fans who says, I want to see more interchange, I want to see less tired players, and I want to see the game go down this, if I get 92% possession against your 90% possession, I win because there's been no mistakes in the game.
Okay, how soon do you want to see this happen, Paul? Start of next season?
Round 12.
You want to see?
I'm just cheering up. No, it should be in next year. It should go to six interchange next year. I will say though, on that, back in I think 91, the NRL brought in unlimited interchange, which was before that it was two fresh reserves, two replacements who had played lower. They brought in unlimited interchange after six rounds. Everyone just said this is a dog's breakfast, and the NRL changed it. 6 weeks. Well, back then it was Australian rugby league. Yeah. They changed it after six rounds, so it was a mid competition change. I agree, don't do it this year, okay? But tell everybody right now it is on for next year. Yeah. And Todd, come out and be the boss and say it.
Yeah, and do you know what? They can actually change the shot clock rules right now. Changing time does not do anything. They're standing around. Have a look.
Yeah.
Calculate how long they're standing around for. Go, okay, the shot clock is getting, it's not 30 seconds now. It's actually 20.
Boys, the Rabbitohs are just having a shot at penalty gold.
Look at you. Put your clothes back on.
They lead the draw. So I'm just doing my job here, Gordon. So I know Souths are playing, and I know I'm a South supporter, but my job is to say the scores as they happen. Adam Reynolds is kicking for goal, and he's kicked it, and the Tide Power scoreboard ticks over again. Rabbitohs 12 lead the Dragons 0. We'll take a break and come back. Talk about the Raiders and the Sharkies as Triple M rocks the footy.
Welcome back. You've never heard the footy like it. This is Triple M footy.
Yeah. Welcome back to Sunday Triple M NRL. And right now we've got Rabbitohs leading the Dragons 12-0, 4 minutes before half time. Tyre Power, get $100 cash card at Tyre Power when you buy four selected Continental passenger or 4x4 tyres. And always make sure you have the Triple M NRL app. And whatever you want to do rugby league related, you can do that. So get it now at triplem.com.au. Boys, we'll do today's game, but we haven't had a chance to have a look at some of those Friday night games yet. Parramatta and Canterbury. Canterbury getting a much deserved win out of that game. The funny game really sort of fell away, I thought, at about 25 minutes, maybe half an hour. But that leaves Parramatta Gerds down on the bottom on their own again. They had a little bit of a flash in the pan, two games in a row, but now they've lost two games in a row again, and you would think that's the end of Parramatta for 2018.
Yeah, I think they're the only other side that have ever done it, and maybe it was 2006 or something, PK, where they actually, 2-8 and then came back and made the finals. But yeah, I thought that was their kind of last throw of the dice, and I thought they had plenty of opportunities, plenty of footy to get the job done there and just couldn't. The Bulldogs, they were resilient. Their goal defence was really good and didn't offer a lot in attack, as Gordy mentioned before, but you know, they did the fundamentals well. They completed. They got to their kicks. They did all that, and that was enough to win on the night. But, Parramatta, I mean, don't know what's happened to them this season, but it's all about pretty much, putting some effort in the back end of the year and working on what's going to happen in 2019 for them, I'm afraid.
Okay, Penrith and Newcastle. Now, Newcastle, we kind of knew they were going to struggle, didn't we, without Mitchell Pearce. So that's now two games in a row they've lost, I think, without Mitchell.
It's really evident he's not there too.
Mm.
That's the thing about the Knights. They're a different side without Mitchell. He just gave them a little bit of composure, I think, in the way they, you know, the irony being the criticism of Mitchell that's been around for so long. But he actually gave them some composure around the end of their sets. He was kicking really well. The team knew where it was working towards in their sets, and Mitchell just brought that little bit of polish that's just clearly lacking right now.
Boys, this game today, which we will have on Triple M at 4 o'clock for you this afternoon, right across the Triple M network, it's the Raiders and the Sharkies. It's an important game for both these sides, but the Raiders have really turned their season around. In the last five games, they've won 4 of 5, which brings themselves back up to 8 points, just outside the 8. It's a home game today. Much has been said about the way they've played in the last, I guess, 4 or 5 weeks. The back three we love. We all love Kotrick, Whiten, Rapana up front. They're big and strong. It's a home game. You think they'll win this one, Gordy?
Yeah, oh, they're hard to beat. It's obviously when the Raiders play their style and they all do their role, I think they had to adjust their game. Obviously losing, you know, Hodson, which has been such a key player for them over time. When they lost him, I think they just had to find a new way to play a little bit, and they've finally hit their groove, and the Raiders are big and strong, mate. Just the amount of metres and space that they give each other, and their back three are second to none, aren't they? Like, the amount of work they get through, the quality work, the questions they ask you when you're getting tied around a ruck. And that's what I like about the Raiders. They go straight through your front door. Like, they love playing sides up the middle, playing against their big guys. Well, they probably can because they can match their big guys, and they're really good to watch.
Yeah. Oh, look, Cronulla are a side, they really fancy their chances. They think that they have the style that upsets the Raiders. Let's remember a couple of years ago when Cronulla went on that run down there and won the grand final. They did it by beating the Raiders in the last round, then beating them in the first round, the semis, both times down in Canberra.
Mm.
And they did it in a way that they get in the Raiders' face and they upset them, and they know how to attack their strong points, the big guys. They get them on their back. They slow their play. Mm. Then they get rid of their momentum through the middle, and they believe once they get rid of that momentum through the middle, then they're able to essentially outperform the Raiders from that point on. I think it's significant that Paul Gallen's back for Cronulla today. That will help Cronulla get their game plan in order. So they're a strong chance today. I don't think that it's by any means all one-way traffic for Canberra.
When you look at the Raiders and the way they start the season and the size of their team, sometimes you'd think it might take them half a dozen rounds before they sort of build into things. The concern for me is obviously they lost their first 4 games, and then the 4 wins that they've had, the Titans, the Cowboys, the Eels and the Dogs. I mean, none of those sides are at the top of their game, but you can only beat who's in front of you, and I think today will be a big test for the Raiders. But I agree with PK and the fact that, you know, the Sharks are going to make it really messy in the ruck, and that's the area that the Raiders like really clean. They like a clean play of the ball. Their big outside backs come in, and if they time that right with their forwards going forward, well, they've got the simplest game plan in the NRL. And if they've got their kicking game working with Caesar and Austin, which it has been in the last few weeks, because they've won that ruck area, everything's gone their way, and they've been able to, you know, come away with some wins. When you play the Sharks, you just need to win without things going your way. And I think that's what they need to adapt to today. The ruck's going to be a mess. They're going to have pressure on their kickers. They're going to have to do all those little gritty things. And they're going to have to be disciplined. And they've got some hotheads in their side in Leilua and that. And the Sharks will bait those guys. So I think it'll be a good game. But I'm leaning towards the Sharks today.
Well, Gerds, what have you made of Matt Moylan's first couple of months at the Sharks?
Oh, it hasn't been as good as what I thought it was going to be honest. I was sort of pushing for him to play fullback after a couple of weeks when they tried him at the 6. I always thought he was a better fullback than he was a 5'8", because of, you know, I watched him closely at Penrith. And I think he can just play on the back of what he sees and follow the ball around. I think he's an on-the-ball player. And when you put him at 6, I think he's got to sort of stay out there in his channel, and he's got a bit of a role. And I thought at the start of the season that role clashed with Wade Graham, who offers so much to the Sharks' attacks. And I thought those two got in each other's way for a while. But then Dugan came on and played some really good games at the back. And I think when the Sharks have got some momentum and got some rhythm, I think Matty Moylan's a great player. But I just think Matty struggles sometimes. He overplays his hand, and when they need a calm head or someone just to, you know, take a tackle or get a really good kick away, he can often go for that big play and doesn't often come up. And I think at 5'8", sometimes he gets his hands on the footy in those moments and they need someone to sort of, you know, at the fullback, Penrith, he didn't. Someone else would get the football and take the reins for him. So I think sometimes he gets in his own way, but he's a great talent. And the last couple of weeks he's been good, but today's another big test for him.
Yeah, it's a challenge for Matty Morland. We all love his talent. But it's when it's a tough game. And I spoke about Chrissy Sandow earlier. When it's 10-8, that's when Morland needs to stand up. I think when they're chasing points, you see him get his hands on the ball. And when they're, you know, like when they're in front, he's a really good front runner. Like he puts the foot on the pedal really, really hard and he goes. But those real tight situations generally separate all the great playmakers like Darren Lockyer and Joey and all those guys. And the real tight, they want the ball. And I think that's what Matty's got to learn to do. Today, when it's tough and his side's not on the front foot, what does my team need me to do now? And it's harder than what it looks. Otherwise, everybody'd be doing it. But that's what the great ones, that's how they separate themselves.
Okay, boys. So who do you like to win this one, Gordy?
I'm going to go the Raiders. I just think their big forward pack can make you look slow and old, you know. And then everything that Gerd's alluded to, like, you know, in the Sharks, they drag you down to their level and they beat you on experience. They just make it uncomfortable for you. They are going to go down there with a game plan and they're all going to stick to it and they're going to be tough and gritty. But I think if the Raiders play good, the Raiders will have too much for them today.
So, Paul, it feels like the Sharks are in the top eight. It feels like they kind of shouldn't be. They haven't had a brilliant year, but they're just sitting in there in eighth position. Do you like them to win down there today, mate, the Sharkies?
I don't care. Look, I've tipped the Raiders, but with no confidence, I think Sharks are right in it. And they haven't been talked about this year, Maroon, because they haven't played one of those games yet where you just sat back and went, wow, what about that? Every game's been scrappy. They've had a lot of disruptions with injuries, their combinations, but they've been trying different halves combinations. They've been trying fullbacks and their edge players. They're in a constant state of change. Unlike the Dragons, who we spoke to earlier, had the same starting 13 for all 10 rounds. Sharks, I think, have been different nearly every week.
Yeah.
So it's a bit hard to get a read, I think, on them. But I do give them a real strong chance today. Okay. I think it's a real even money game.
Half time there, Rabbitohs 12 lead the Dragons 0. Ryan, you like the Raiders today too?
No, I like the Sharks, okay. Murray. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that, given the fact that if they can play their style, and also, you know, if you're going down, you're going to play the Raiders. And you play smart, you know, you keep the football away from them, you know, and you move them around the park, you know, especially with your attack, you know, you get a little bit of width with your pass and all of a sudden you've got really big guys through the middle and you're willing to pass the ball in your own end, but you do it smart and you play a really tactical game. I think the Sharks can do it and they'll have to be good, but I think they've sort of been warming up over the last couple of weeks and I think they've won, you know, three of their last four and they've been playing some decent sides amongst that. So, yeah, I think they'll be up for the challenge today. And as PK said, Gal's back and it'll just give them that little bit of confidence in the sheds before the game. And that's what you kind of needed when you go up against these really big, aggressive sort of sides. If you've got your forward leaders around, it'll give the other guys in the side some confidence.
Rabbitohs 12, Dragons 0. Rabbitohs got two early tries in that game at ANZ Stadium. So, and then I think both those tries came in the opening 10 minutes. Then there was a bit of a gap there. Adam Reynolds kicked a penalty goal, but nothing from the Dragons as yet. Souths 12, Dragons 0. Boys, I think that might just about do us. We'll take a break and come back, and Dan Ganane will be on deck with the boys to preview the game between the Sharks and the Raiders. Gordon Tallis, have a great week. We'll catch you on Fox League.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Paul, we'll see you on NRL 360.
Thanks, Anthony.
And Gerds, you just hang around. You're not done yet.
Okay.
Sunday Triple M is Triple M Rocks the Footy.